Okay, ladies and gentlemen, we're so pleased to welcome these four senators to join us today. They all provide leadership and expertise in a variety of issues in the Senate, and we're looking forward to hearing their perspectives. Let's see. Oh, y'all are in a different order than I got on my thing. So we have Senator Floyd Nicholson from Greenwood, Senator Larry Grooms from Bono. Let's see, Senator Larry Martin from Pickens. I wanted to make sure I knew where y'all knew where you were from. And Senator Yancey McGill from Kingstree. You'll find bios on each of these gentlemen in your seats. And we're going to start this thing by asking each senator to give us a snapshot of what they see as the landscape of the General Assembly right now in the sixth week of the session. And then we'll move to some specific questions. So I'll... Senator Nicholson says we're going to start with the senior senators.
Randy, thank you very much. We are very appreciative of the Municipal Association of South Carolina, its director, all those that work so very closely with us in the General Assembly. It's a delight today to see many individuals here, the Mayor of Charleston, the Mayor of Columbia. Certainly I know the Mayor of Greenville is here. A number of my mayors are here, City Council members in my Senate District 32. Our Senate District 32 is Oree, Georgetown, Williamsburg, Florence, and Berkeley counties. Mayor Anderson, of course, over in the Lake City area, has the blessing to have a Miss Darla Moore, who's investing very wisely. Joe, as you know, in Charleston, but investing very wisely. But what I see is the big major issue is the appropriation bill, local government fund, which has always been a major issue with all four of us. I can tell you Senator Grooms has always been a major supporter of the local government fund. And also I would share with you Senator Martin and as well as the former mayor, Floyd Nicholson. I served two terms as mayor of Kingstree, one term on city council. And I can tell you if you've never served in local government, you should never be in the Senate or in the House. How you like that? And I also can tell you this, we're looking at about a $22.8 billion a year budget, some $8 billion on the federal level, dollars coming in, $8 billion other funds, and somewhere around $6.9 billion in local state funds. I can tell you South Carolina, with the credit of these individuals, Chairman Hugh Leatherman, who's Chairman of Senate Finance, Bobby Harrell, who's Speaker of the House, as well as Brian White, who is Ways and Means Chairman. We enjoy a AAA credit rating in this state. We're only 12 of 50 states that enjoys this AAA credit rating. What a grand situation for this state. I would, Mayor Scovel, I would like to say this, that there's no question in my mind that AAA a rating inspires local governments to do the same. We must watch every dime that we spend, but more than that, this local government fund, we know that some 83% of those funds come back to the county government, some 17% come to the municipalities. We can remember when we were sitting at about 280, we can also remember when we dropped down to some 180 million. And I can tell you that last year, the Senate took a stand. We put some $30 million back with the local government fund. We wanted to take it and restore it to the full amount. It would take another $50 million to do it. But you're looking at four members that will absolutely support the local government fund. We've got to make absolutely sure that the $30 million is restored that we put in last year, because we know what that money means on the local level. I better stop there. Yes, sir.
We're going to take up an offering here in a
minute. Thank
you. Yeah. Thank you. Well, it's a real pleasure to be with you, Mayor, and all the mayors and city council folks around South Carolina. What a great job you do. We appreciate, we value the partnership that we have with you in our respective districts. It's extremely important to us in order to be able to more effectively represent you. The municipalities are the lifeblood of South Carolina. We respect that and appreciate it, Mayor. Let me just say that as we start early in the session, We're 6 weeks into the session, and the House is on furlough this week. I had one mayor suggest that the crime rate had gone down appreciably in Columbia. Don't tell them I said that. But, you know, we've had a pretty good start in the Senate. I'm sort of the new chairman. I took over last year, Mayor, as chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee when then-Chairman McConnell was elevated to lieutenant governor, and he's doing an outstanding job.
Yes, he has.
And I rely on his judgment, Mayor Riley, a great deal still. He's not far away, and that's a really good thing. But Senator Nicholson and I, serving on judiciary together, have had quite a beginning, I think, of the session, getting it off to a pretty good start. Just a couple things I'll mention that you've heard about and deal with in your capacities. One is the sweepstakes bill that we got through the Senate very early to close what some perceive as the loophole in the video poker ban, to reinforce the public policy that is not something that we're going to allow, at least to be sued into existence. The other issue is the election issue from last year that was somewhat left over from last session, where we unfortunately had a ruling by our Supreme Court that the filing was not properly done, and it impacted a lot of candidates, impacted about all of us in various ways, and we've dealt with that. We've addressed it again. We actually addressed it last session, but couldn't get it completely through the process. But we need to finish that and get that done as a standalone bill in order to restore whatever confidence was lost in that part of the process to make sure that that doesn't happen again. The other issue that we've dealt with early on is early voting. It's on the calendar today. That would be of interest to you. It will most likely be debated this afternoon in the Senate. If you come over, you'll actually see us get to it. It's the first bill up on a contested calendar, and that bill has come out and come to the floor kind of early. The other issues dealing with raffles by charitable organizations, yesterday in Judiciary sent out a constitutional amendment. Many of you are involved in your communities and nonprofit organizations that over the years have had very innocently run raffles to raise money, and unfortunately that is in contravention of our existing constitution. So we're attempting to address that, and we got it out of Judiciary yesterday, my colleagues on finance, with a 20-0 vote.
Wow.
Which indicates that we should have a good bit of support, hopefully, on the floor. I would only add, as we go down the line and as we answer questions, that as a practical matter, in the state Senate, the new senators that have come to the Senate are all on the Judiciary Committee, and there are 10 of them. And I recognize the mayor from Sumter, former colleague of mine in the House, his son from Sumter County, Thomas McElveen, is the new senator from Sumter, and the other nine are just doing a great job, making a great contribution to the Senate as they begin their service to the people of South Carolina, and we appreciate that. And again, we look forward to further discussion and working with you any way we can to help move South Carolina forward.
Thank you. One of the challenges, and also great opportunity, this last election cycle, we lost nearly 100 years of cumulative experience with some of the members of the Senate. That's a lot of institutional knowledge that's no longer there. But as Senator from Pickens mentioned, we've got 10 new guys, ten new guys and gal.
That's right.
And having to adjust to their way of thinking, their way of doing things, and also adjusting to the way we do things. Learning where the bathroom is, learning how you file a bill, learning how you place an amendment. There's a learning curve, and they're catching on rather quickly. In my wheelhouse, I'm the guy. I chair the Transportation Committee. Our roads, our bridges, our rail infrastructure, our ports. That's what's first and foremost on my mind. And I don't have. It's no secret. Our DOT needs more money. Absolutely needs more money, and we've known that for some time. And some folks have said, we need to pass the gasoline tax, and they were pushing for that 10 years ago. And my thought back then was, I don't think that's politically possible. What else can we do? And some ideas were on the table back then. Well, we've 10 years later, we're now looking back going, maybe we should have listened to some of those things Grooms was talking about. I've put forth a plan right now. It's called the Give Me Five Plan. Give Me Five Plan. If state revenues increase by more than 5%, we'll take a portion of the growth in state revenues and dedicate it to highway maintenance and road construction. And if the economy ticks along like we think it will next year, another 1%. And we continue to do this until 5% of the general fund revenue is diverted to road construction, maintenance, and expansion. There's some folks who are saying, well, you can't do that. The general fund's for other purposes. Well, that's what they were saying 10 years ago. And it would be a shame that if we look back 10 years from now, going, you know what, maybe Grooms was onto something. We're further behind than where we need to be. We have to put more money to the DOT. We can't maintain what we already have. And you know that in your cities. You've seen the condition of your asphalt. Our interstate systems are pretty good on maintenance. We need to expand, but the maintenance is pretty good. Fair to excellent, that's the rating. But then you get to our secondary roads, some of the roads in our subdivisions, some of the roads in your municipalities, and you understand that we're not doing too good. We're at a service level where we have to put some money for road resurfacing. So where's it gonna come from? We're not making do with what we have. We have to have additional sources of revenue. I put forth a plan. There are other plans that are out there, but any plan that we put to the DOT to increase the amount of money for infrastructure, it has to be sustainable. It has to be bondable, or else we're not going to get to where we need to be. We've made great progress with our port. We were losing business like no other port on the East Coast, continued to decline. The port's largest customer, Maersk, had decided that they were going to leave. But we're able to understand what their needs were. We addressed their needs. We passed a port restructuring bill, and now we're seeing the benefits by it. We have the fastest growing port on the East Coast. And if you don't live on the coast, what does that port mean to me? Most of the jobs created by the port are in three counties, Greenville, Spartanburg, Anderson. Our state's industrial base is dependent upon our port, 1 out of 10 jobs. When the goods come in and when the goods come out, they go through the arteries of our state, our interstates and our primary highways. And if the port is doing bad, our state's doing bad. If the port's doing good, then we've got folks from all over the world that are calling our Department of Commerce. We'd like to take a look at South Carolina. So it's important that our port continue to grow. No matter where you are in the state, I tell you, support the port, because the port supports this state. We've got some challenges on rail, some rail issues that need to be addressed. But we're meeting those challenges, and rail side's okay. Rail side's okay. We need to move forward. But our interstate highways, if we do everything we need to do at the port and don't expand our major corridors, the traffic's going to back up, and those folks could be looking elsewhere. So the port's important. Infrastructure improvements are important. Our highway network's important, and we have to address it, and we have to put additional dollars there. And that's going to be a fight this year in the General Assembly. One of many.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. First, I would just like to say it is indeed an honor for me to be present with the other great senators here as we come to a body that's very dear to me, the Municipal Association. I was involved in municipal government for 25 years. I served 11 years on city council and 14 years as mayor. And really, that's where the rubber meets the road, because when I'm in the Senate, I can come down here and be away for 3 days and I don't have to worry about seeing everybody and discuss things when I go to the grocery store. My wife used to say, I can't send you to the store to get one thing because it takes 3 hours, because you got to run into constituents who have questions and you have to talk to them, you know. So being down here, you can avoid that for a while. But I know Senator Martin brought you up to date on a lot of things that we've covered in the first 6 weeks, but we know we have a lot of challenges here in our state. And the only way we're going to meet those challenges is by putting the partisan politics aside and working together to meet those challenges and think about things that we need to do to enhance our state and the citizens and not enhance the party and the politics. There are many things. You know, Senator Groom was just talking about, you know, our roads and bridges and everything. Those are things that we're going to have to address, and we're going to have serious discussions, because when you think about economic development, just like you said about our goods, raw materials getting in, the finished products getting out, they depend upon trucking, going over the roads. And we got to make sure that we have good roads for them to travel on. You know, up in Greenville, just about every night, you hear of accidents out on 85. You know, there are serious problems up there with 18-wheelers and everything. So economic development is very important, because we got to have the good jobs for our people here in the state. And we send our young people off to college, we want them to stay here, we got to have the good jobs to attract them to stay here. So economic development is very important. So that's why we got to address the issues dealing with our roads and bridges, because the longer we wait, the more it's going to cost. You know, so we need to be addressing these things right now. You know, we're going to have things coming up with the budget. You know, the projections, you know, are sort of down. But aid to subdivision is something that's so important, because if we cut you off, when it gets to where your rubber reaches the road, the only thing you have to do is think about taxes, because people don't want services cut. They don't want services cut. So you have to figure out a way to provide those services, and the only thing you have to rely upon is taxes. You know, so we got to work together and be creative and come up in ways to fund things that are so important. Another thing is, we have to think about education. Education is the key to everything. It's the key to everything. And it starts with K-4. You know, we got to have money going into and doing a better job with K-4, because we need kids on level when they go into school. I don't care if you go in 2 miles behind and you run at the same pace, you're going to remain 2 miles behind. So it's important that we have things, good K-4 programs, kindergarten programs, to get our students prepared, because education. You know, they talk about jobs. There are many jobs out there, but we don't have the trained workforce for those jobs. You know, we got to redirect the training we have for our young people to meet the needs of the high-tech jobs that we have now. It's a different day. The mills are gone, textiles are gone, those jobs are gone. The jobs now are high tech. So we got to train our young people. We need to think about the ones that are going into higher ed, but also think about those that are going to the workforce, and look at the 2-year college programs that provide excellent training where they can go get a good trade and learn, earn a good living. So we got to redirect the way that we do things here in our state. And it's all about working together to advance our state forward. I get tired of hearing South Carolina at the bottom, near bottom of everything. We're making progress, and I tell you, this group right here, these are some of the leaders, you know, in the Senate that are concerned about the welfare of our state and are willing to put the partisan politics aside and say, we're going to sit down and work together, because this is what we need to do for our state. So I commend each one of you for what you do day in, day out, mayor, city council people, you know, because I know it's a very hard job, because you're there day in and day out. You go to the store, someone always stopping, asking you for this and that, you know. So, you know, we all got to work together. We're all in this together, because we are concerned about the welfare of our state. You know, we all represent different districts, but you have to look at the total picture. What's best for the state? You just cannot be concerned about the people in your district. Let's look at the total picture and do what's best for our state to move our state forward. Again, I'm delighted to be with you, and good to see so many of my old friends that are still fighting the battle. Thank you.
Thanks, Senator.
Okay, we've got several questions, and I'm glad to hear I'm not the only person who can't go to the grocery store sometimes. It takes me a long time to get anywhere.
Send my wife now.
Yeah, I can understand that, Senator. We've touched on a lot of the issues already that in your opening statements, but let's expand a little bit if we can, and we'll start, Senator Grooms, with you talking about transportation issues as you were leading into that. What's your perspective on what might happen this year with transportation funding? I know you hit on it a little bit, but let's get a little deeper into that if you can. And after he speaks, anybody else can say answer as well.
If excuse me, funding's the big issue. There were some folks that were saying, we're not going to put another dime to the DOT until we get reform. We're not going to do it. Thing is, we got reform. We got a DOT restructuring bill that went through. We have objective criteria now have to be applied to the road projects that the DOT moves forward with. We have a cabinet level secretary. So don't let anybody tell you, I'm not putting any money to the DOT until we get reform. We passed a reform bill. The only major restructuring bill that passed the assembly in the last 20 years was the DOT restructuring bill. Some projects were already in the works that weren't covered under it, but right now, if you want a new project somewhere, it's going to be scored with all the other projects in the state. And if your project, the one you have the most interest in, if it rises to the top, that's where the funds go. Problem is, it's not a lot of funds. We put in a fix-it-first strategy within the DOT restructuring bill, but it's not fixing it first as fast as we'd like. We're still crumbling. The Secretary of Transportation, General St. Onge, I think he spoke at a group and said that his job is to manage the decline of our state's greatest asset. That's a sad statement. If his job is to manage the decline of our state's greatest asset, our transportation network, there has to be more money to the DOT. And politics, as you know, is the art of what is possible. What are the possible ways of putting more money to the DOT where we are right now? How can we do that? And that's why I laid forth a plan. The Give Me Five plan. I think it makes sense. We're not taking money away from anybody, but if the state revenues grow at a certain percentage, then we take a little bit off the top and put it to road construction and maintenance, and those monies would be bondable. If the economy doesn't tick along as we had hoped, then we don't expand that pot. But we got to do something. We got to start somewhere. I'd ask your House members and your Senate members to take a look at the Give Me Five plan. But that's not the only one that's out there. And I've supported this in the past. Let's take the sales tax on automobiles. Let's use that. Let's send that money to the infrastructure bank. About $35 million a year. That's bondable. That'll buy us some lane expansion. That'll buy us some new roads, some new interchanges, some things that we really need. There's a number of ideas that are floating out. I think the governor is taking some non-recurring monies this year and programming it into the DOT. That's a good thing for maintenance if it's non-recurring, but you can't build a section of highway on that. You can't expand Highway 17A. You can't expand I-85. You can't expand a major road project with non-recurring money. That's good for maintenance, but it's not enough. There has to be a dedicated stream of revenue that we can depend on year after year, or else we're just spinning our wheels. So those are the things that we'll be debating this year. General St. Onge is going around the state, and if you call him, he'd love to come to your town and give a presentation. He'd love to meet with your Chamber of Commerce, your Lions Club, whichever civic organization, and he'll give the presentation. He'll show you what we're doing right, and he'll show you where we're deficient. It's eye-opening when you see the presentation and you understand what the needs are. So we got some needs that have to be met. And one thing I've discovered about the General Assembly, if the case is clear, if a need is clear, if it's presented in such a way that the House and Senate members understand this has to be done, we generally find a way of doing it. It might not be the way some people would like, but it generally gets done. There's a need out there. It has to get done. And I don't believe it's politically possible to pass a gasoline tax. Some people are still saying, if I don't get a gas tax, there's no need to go there. Gasoline tax is not going to happen. It didn't happen 10 years ago. It's not going to happen now. I don't see it happen anytime soon. If one body were to pass it, I don't see the other body passing it. And if the other body were to pass it, I don't see the governor signing it. So what's politically possible? That's what I'm asking my colleagues. That's what I'm asking you. What's politically possible? So that's the issues we have with DOT and DOT funding. let's pass something that's politically possible so that we can go ahead and put the money where we need to put it.
Thank you. Anybody?
Well, the only thing I would add, I think Senator Berkley has certainly outlined the problem. I would say that it's going to be awful difficult to squeeze out very much on a recurring basis out of the budget because of where we are. I mean, we're still about $300 million, I think it is, Senator, in our general fund where we were about 5 years ago. And that's the practical side of that, where we are on a non-recurring basis. I agree with the Senator. I think there's no question. We did this with the port when we obligated a good bit of our non-recurring carry forward money from the last budget year. I forget how much it was. It was well north of $100 million that we put into the port dredging. There's a plan being talked about in the House, and I recognize the politics of it too. But I really think that if we could come up with some way to capture, particularly out of state folks, there's some talk about a credit that you raise the gas tax, provide some sort of tax credit back to the citizens of the state. You get about 40% of that, of the gas tax that's collected from out of state. And that's a lot of wear and tear on our roads that we're just letting it run by us. There may be some traction for that. I don't know. But, it's got to come from somewhere. And we desperately need to do it. I think the biggest thing is you dedicate the money, and I know we talk about new projects, but what we've got to find a way to do, because we're not doing it, all the money is obligated, at least the way I understand the highway funding stream right now is pretty much obligated to existing bond programs, big bond programs that DOT has entered into. Very little money out there for resurfacing. I think our biggest need around South Carolina right now is resurfacing our existing roads, maintaining, and of course our bridge problem that we've got around the state. I think if you identified a way to fund it, folks wouldn't mind paying for it if they knew, and we could all reach an agreement that said, look, it's only going to be used to fund existing maintenance and take care of what we got. We're not going to hire any additional employees for the DOT. It's all going to be left for asphalt, concrete, and roads. I think there'd be broad support around the state for that, but it's all in the way it's put together. It's who grabs the leadership mantle for it. And I do think we can't let this problem go very much longer. It's got to be addressed.
Let me quickly, I want to follow up. Senator Grooms, what you have said is fiscally responsible. It's the right way to go. Give me five. I like that. With new revenues that come into the state to obligate some of those new revenues, especially when the years the funds really are coming in a great way, I would support that very quickly. But I can also tell you this. How we spend our money sometimes is what hurts us the greatest. I know that over in Lake City, Mae Anderson, we're in the process now, five-phase, million-dollar project on resurfacing roads in Lake City. And it took a lot of attitude adjustment locally with CTC, your County Transportation Commission, to get them to invest that money. But also down in the Andrews area, Maddie, we've just finishing $1 million resurfacing. We have some 12 to 14 roads in that city. Things don't happen. You've got to go to these meetings. You've got to meet with these CTC committees. You have got to participate in order to get something back. I know down in Georgetown County, Jack, we will pave 7 dirt roads, and they told me that it would cost $3.5 million. I got Moot Truluck, Mayor Raleigh, and Carity Men, and some others, and we looked at it. And what we did, instead of seeing 2 contractors bid these 7 roads, we got 6 contractors. We cut back on some of the specs to make it real with the existing, better the road, still went with that 4 or 5 pounds of aggregate with the 150-pound asphalt on top of it. When the bids were open, It costs $886,000 to do that $3.5 million worth of work. And now they got a pilot program where they've gone and dropped the pilot program, where they're paving, instead of three or four roads a year, they're paving 18 to 20 roads a year. And so, can it be done? Yes, it can. You've got to have the knowledge. 25 years ago, it cost $18,000 a mile to resurface a road. Today, you're looking at $200,000 to $225,000 a mile to resurface a road, depending on the circumstance. But as Senator Groom said, there's no question the condition of the roads that are deteriorating. It's going to cost another $100,000 a mile just to bring the roads back, but it can be resurfaced. I would like to say one other thing about the ports. Senator Grooms and I both serve on the Economic and certainly the Natural Resource Subcommittee of Senate Finance. Chairman of Finance asked us to put $300 million in the budget to help that port go to 50 feet, be dredged to 50 feet clearance. We know that Panamax is not far away. But also, when we did it, it was a pleasure because everybody in the General Assembly wanted to help in the dredging of this port, $300 million. But we also have been working on the Georgetown County port, some $36.5 million to dredge that port. The only difference between Georgetown and Charleston, Georgetown has already got all of its Army Corps base permits together. And of course, within 8 to 10 months, if we put this $36.5 million on the table, that port will be dredged to some 27 feet. And so I share with you that partnerships, as Senator Martin shared earlier, you can do anything if you work together, but you as a municipality, understand those of us who served on city council, Gloria, those of us that served as mayor, Mayor Burrows, I can tell you right now, that my knees stayed, Brother Robinson, stayed bloody. And I'm telling you, if you've served in local government, you've had to beg and beg to get help. But a lot of times you gotta look in that mirror, because it's not always gonna come from the feds or come from the state. You've got to organize locally, you've got to get people in there that will help you, and you can't just assume that these resources and funds are gonna come in to a municipality or come into a county. And so I share with you, Randy, that we've been in serious times, but there are projects going on because the people are asking for the money. Mm-hmm. You always hear there's no money. There's plenty of money.
One thing, Randy.
Okay.
I want some of it.
Yeah. I just want a child's course. Yeah.
Randy, I just want to add one thing. You know, we talk about projects, the DOT and everything. One thing we really need to look at, how these projects are ranked. You know, just like Senator Groom said, it's all about the numbers. You find out most of the money go to the urban areas. The rural areas are usually left out. Why? Numbers. You have more people in the urban areas than in the rural areas. So when they do those counts, there are more cars, so there are more numbers, and that's usually how the rank problem goes. We really got to look at this project so that the rural areas will not be left out, because there are needs right there.
Amen.
Okay, let's move on to another topic. We frequently hear from our local elected officials that dilapidated buildings pose a huge challenge to our cities of all sizes. They drain on taxpayer dollars, cause public safety problems, and affect economic development efforts. Yesterday, Senator Martin and Senator Brad Hutto introduced legislation that would give local officials another tool to deal with these unsafe structures. Senator Martin, why do you think it's important that cities have this another tool to deal with the unsafe structures that we've got in our towns?
Well, it's something we attempted to address last session, and working with y'all, we made progress on it and recrafted the bill this year in a way that I think it will position it to enjoy a little bit more success. The real need is there when, particularly oftentimes, you have these absentee landlords. They move away, it's a building's in a family, they just lose track of it, don't have any plans to do anything with it, it just runs down, and there you are left with a storefront or dilapidated building that's just falling down. And this would give you a tool, It's not a taking, but it would give you a tool in order to have some recourse in order to go in and make some improvements, keep that building or structure from completely ruining your city or municipal setting. And I believe we'll have the opportunity to move that through. We're going to really try, in working with you and others from around the state, I think we've got a good shot at it. It's one of those things that's important to frame it in a way, not taking anybody's property. We're simply attempting, when you've got these absentee landlords, you can't find them, that you've got the ability to go in and do something to protect the public in those circumstances, and I think it's a good move on our part.
Thank you.
Look forward to working with you on it.
Good. Anybody else?
I just want to say I think it's a very good tool. You know, one thing Senator Martin said, it's a tool. It's something you can have there if you need to use it, you know, to eliminate these dilapidated buildings and everything. If you don't use it. It's a tool. So you need to have everything possible, because I know in Greenwood we have it, you know, but there'll come a time when you can't find the owner of a property, takes so long and people are complaining, you know. You've been talking about this months and months, so you need to have any necessary tool available to make sure that we can eliminate, because you know you're creating problems. You know, when you have dilapidated buildings there, all kind of activities going on inside these buildings at night and everything, drugs and everything, and we need to eliminate it. So I think it's a good move, you know, any possible tool you can have available to eliminate these dilapidated buildings.
I got a good idea that we've got a good member of the subcommittee sitting here on the Judiciary Committee that we might use him for that.
There you go.
There you go.
All right. Just bring in an idea.
Another tool.
Okay, we've talked about this a little bit as well. You all know that the Municipal Association's priority is, one of our priorities is the stability of the local government fund. And we've talked some about that. And times have changed since the local government fund was established in 92. This year, there's interest, it seems, in studying the issue and maybe even changing the funding formula going forward. Senator McGill, we'll start with you since you've had a lot to say about that. What do you see as the future of the local government fund?
Right now, talked with Chairman of Finance this week, and he wants to make sure the $30 million that was put in last year, matter of fact, he recommended the $30 million being put in. He wants to see it retained at that level. You have some talk in the General Assembly of trying to do totally away with aid to subdivision. Listen closely to this topic and this subject. I can tell you now, if you've ever talked and met with your Senate and House members, those in here that have not met with their Senate and House members in a year or 2 years, I'm not going to say shame on you, but I'm going to tell you, you better start meeting with your Senate and House members. A lot of these fellas say they never hear from their municipal officials or county officials. I can tell you this, that we are not going to do away with the local government fund. It will be the bloodiest battle that we've ever had in the General Assembly. And I can tell you this, that we're blessed that we have leadership in the House and the Senate that favor the local government fund. And I know that all four members here have consistently supported it. But there are times when you have to make that decision in health care, education, infrastructure, a lot of these areas. You have to make that decision on where that money's going to go. And it goes back to priority. And I can tell you, those that are in touch with their Senate and House members, now the House members, I've learned, are not here this week. Make sure you talk with your House members. There's a little bit of undercurrent, a little bit of talk going on in the House that I have not heard, but I've heard it third hand. But we've got to make absolutely sure that if you don't do anything this week, you need to visit the Senate members. But next week, if you come back into Columbia, or if you can visit at the end of the week, your House members, you don't ask them to say, please help me, Senate House member. Can I count on your commitment? Give me a yes. Don't say, I want you to help me out. That might mean they're going to take the money totally from you. I'm telling you now, that we in times where money's starting to come in. But remember, local governments, Mayor Nicholson, you said it, it's the closest government to the people. And I can tell you that it is of urgency that you talk to them. I don't want to be repetitious. I'm just telling you. Because when these votes come out, you look at that roll call and see who supported this local government fund. It is just like the federal revenue sharing funds years ago. A lot of budgets were based on that fund, should not have been. That was in 79, I think it was cut out. And I also know this, a lot of the funds were used for capital improvements. But remember one thing, you may could have done this in the past, you can't do it today. You can't tax your way out. You can't borrow your way out. You've got to grow your way out. You've got to grow your base economy. You've got to work on those retail stores. You've got to get a master plan of what's going on in your city, a down view map, and you've got to get these local merchants to help and aid in bringing new customers in. That's how you go strengthen your local government, growing your base economy. If you're not doing that, you go fail. Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Anybody? All right, well, another issue that cities are struggling with is how to pay for the relocation of utility lines when DOT widens a road or puts in a new road. And I know, Senator Nicholson, you're on a study committee looking at solutions to this issue, so we'd like to know what you've been hearing about this.
Well, one thing is, you know, I'm dealing with a project now in one of my counties in McCormick, and they say the relocation of these utilities probably costs about $750,000. If the county pay for that, they have to close everything else down. You know, when you think about in the rural communities where a lot of these dilapidated bridges are located and everything, when you think about relocating the utilities and everything, it's a very costly expense. But we're trying to figure out ways, you know, that we can work together to have it cost effective and be able to fund it. And the main thing is funding it, because when you look at rural communities, you know, they just do not have the resources to be able to relocate these utilities. So we're looking at ways we can get the various entities to talk together, you know, whether it's utilities, telephone, and see how can we come up with ways. Because a lot of time when you talk about the first thing, they say liability. Who's going to have the liability responsibility? Mm-hmm. And if we can get beyond that, because we're going to have to come up with ways, you know, because right now we're just in the early stages. We're supposed to have a report back, you know, but we're just talking about identifying where the major problems at and ways that we can probably do it. And we have not gotten into the funding, because just like Senator Groom said, you know, earlier, hey, there's no money, you know, because DOT don't have the money and everything. Hey, we're replacing the bridge, you know. We're not responsible for the utilities. So we're just trying to be innovative and think of ways, you know, we got to do this, because just like the roads, you know, the longer we wait, the worse it's going to be. And we know, so we're just in the early stages now of identifying and trying to get the various parties to come together and say, hey, how can we do this, you know, and everything. So it's going to be a serious problem, but it's something, like always, we are going to have to do it. We got to do it and everything. So we're in the early planning stages of identifying the major problems, you know, and trying to get the various entities to come together to discuss ways that we might be able to do it.
Okay. Thank you. Anybody else want to?
I'll say this. I tell you, being a municipal mayor before, these things, it's unbelievable. We're discussing some of the same things today that we did 25 years ago.
Yeah.
In relocating water, sewer, gas lines, power lines, what I have found is that the power company, or generally the water company, sewer company, they may invest if others are going to invest.
That's what
sometimes you can get the community development block grant people to participate, depending on how you work the application. I can also tell you that your CTC committee, they should come to the table and help you in relocating these lines. We have put provisos in the appropriation bill in Columbia, helping remove and relocate water and sewer lines. Now that was done about 1:30 in the morning, but.
It was done.
You gotta get creative, you can't sit back and wait.
That's right.
Yes, sir.
It is a complex problem, and that's why we created the study committee. There were some ideas put on the table, at least in the last 2 years, that may have worked in one area, would not have worked in another.
Absolutely.
And it's not just the cost, it's also the time that it takes to move the utilities.
Yeah.
When DOT bids out a project to contractors on the job, and then when they can't move forward with the project because the utilities haven't been moved in a timely fashion, then you end up with cost overruns, and it's a problem that just feeds on itself. So we put together through Proviso, creating the study committee to make some recommendations, and the recommendations, that'll be the blueprint of how we'll address this problem. But there is no simple fix to this. And it is more than just money, it's also time and who's responsible, then you have your mixture of public and private utilities all caught up in it.
Thank you. Okay, we've got time for one more question, I think, and we'll just throw this out for anybody and everybody that wants to jump in here. Tax reform is always a major topic of discussion at State House, and this year we're hearing conversations about changing assessment rates on some types of commercial property. In addition to reducing local revenue to local governments, the bonding capacity of local governments may also be impacted. What do you anticipate will happen with this issue this year? That's up for anyone to take.
Well, I'm not on finance in that regard, but I tell you, you have to proceed very, very cautiously. Obviously, we went through Act 308, and you know that wasn't an easy project to go through for a lot of different reasons. But anytime you tweak one area of the tax code, there's going to be an equal and opposite reaction. So I just don't know if there's going to be very much sentiment for changing assessment ratios. And that, of course, assessment ratios require constitutional amendment because they are locked into the Constitution. So I haven't seen anything on that just yet, but I know it's always talked about, particularly the commercial, the second homes, particularly up and along our coast, you know, up around my part of the state now with the lakes, the developments around Lake Kiwi, Hartwell, 6% homes have really gone up in terms of the ability of folks to pay the 6%, which is essentially a commercial rate. We see that particularly along the coast a good bit. It would be nice to fix that. The problem is when we address it, it causes problems for local government's budget. And I don't know how you phase that in and not create the unintended negative consequence, but it is, that's an area that we would have to rely on y'all to help us with in terms of phasing something in. I'd love to be able to do that, because I think going forward, second home ownership is going to be much, much more challenging for a lot of folks just by virtue of that high price.
The problems with the 10.5% properties. Yeah. If you're a large enough company, you can come into a county and get a fee in lieu, and you're at 6%. You've got virtually no say-so in it. It happens. What about the smaller guy? What about a guy that's putting in a $200,000 or $1 million facility, is going to hire a few people and benefit the economy? He's going to stay right there. He's paying 10.5%, and then the big guy that comes in out of state is paying 6%. There's some inequity there. And if you're big enough, you can get all kinds of incentives thrown at you. You really can. But what are we missing for the small and medium-sized folks where a lot of the job growth and creation occurs? We're unequal. We want to be fair and equal to everybody, just some are more special than others. And that's the way it's been for a long time. But one of the greatest impediments for economic development is overcoming the 10.5% assessment. And we recognized that a while back, so we came up with this fee in lieu idea. And it's been successful, but it's been successful on the big end, on the big boys, the guys that's got a lot of money that can decide almost anywhere they want to go. But if you're trying to grow your base, if you've got a small manufacturing plant that's now paying 10.5%, if they're going to expand, they're going to look to another state that could give them a better rate. We have to somehow adjust it, but we also have to adjust it in a way that doesn't harm local governments. And that's the key. That's the key with a lot of things. just because we've done something this way for a long time doesn't mean we should continue to do it. It's just how do we transition in a way that holds everybody harmless and is fair to everybody?
Yes.
Yep. Well, Senators, Senator McGill, Senator Martin, Senator Groom, Senator Nicholson, we sure do appreciate y'all taking time out of your morning to come share it with us and give us your insights. It's been a great meeting, and we will be working with you on all these things. So we appreciate your time, and let's give the senators a round of applause.